You're listening to 97.3 LPFM, and this is Open Source RVA. Today on Open Source, we surrender! No, but really, it's French Film Festival time, and we talk with Peter and Francois Kirkpatrick, the founders and organizers of the annual Francophile Freakout at the Bird Theater. And we also talk with Glenn Sturtevant and Kim Gray about the school district's efforts to get a handle on truancy, and about a growing school of thought on the board led by Sturtevant that may see city schools boycotting the state standard of learning tests. But first, here are the headlines happening right now.
For Open Source RVA, I'm Amy Daniel, and here's the news. The Firehouse Theater Project drama continues. On Wednesday, the board of directors of the venerable theater company rejected a proposal from a group of theater and community representatives that would have seen co-founder Carol Pearsall return to her former position as artistic director. We would like to have an ongoing and productive working relationship with Ms. Pearsall, but we will not reinstate her as artistic director, read a press statement from the nonprofit's board on their rejection of the proposal. Pearsall's firing by the board in December of last year touched off a firestorm in the local arts community that continues to burn as her supporters vow to continue a very vocal boycott of the theater until she returns. You can read the statement from the Firehouse Board of Directors and find Open Source RVA's past coverage of the controversy at our website at rvaopensource.com. The TEDx RVA talks are happening right now at the power plant. Open Source RVA has been live blogging the event all day at branch.com and the TEDx RVA Tumblr page, but the good vibrations of the local creativity summit has been marred by some controversy. Last week, Open Source RVA discovered that TEDx RVA was planning its much-hyped event in violation of the parent TED organization's own rules. TED.com forbids three categories of companies from sponsoring any TED event. One of these categories is cigarettes and tobacco. And yet from the very beginning, the Richmond-based Altria company, logo and all, has been listed on the TEDx RVA website at TEDxRVA.com as an official sponsor. Last week, Open Source RVA's Chris Dovey asked Andy Stefanovich, chief curator and organizer of TEDx RVA, how the Richmond Tobacco Holding Company made the cut and how their inclusion appeared to be against the rules.
Yeah, I'd have to defer to the sponsorship team that's working on that, but there's nothing we've done that's outside the guidelines of the TED laws. It's compliant as any group ever could be on something like that. Yeah, no, and it's all about how it's classified or understood as a sponsor or a partner or a contributor. There's a whole host of things that the sponsor team has been adhering to every single day. So I have no complication or no problem with that. I'm absolutely positive that they've handled it perfectly.
Altria's brands account for half of the U.S. cigarette market share, according to the company's website. Open Source RVA contacted the TED organization last week about Altria's inclusion in the Richmond event, and on Wednesday received an email response from spokesperson Melody Serafino. She called the approval of Altria an oversight and said, "We are working with the TEDx RVA team to remedy this immediately." Altria has since been removed from the TEDx RVA list of sponsors. Interested parties can take a walk on the wild side next Thursday with Animal, the dance party for humans, as they present Common People, a night of hip-hop and Britpop to benefit the Richmond Reproductive Freedom Project. Doors open at 9, and the event starts at 10 p.m. next Thursday, March 28th, at Babes of Carytown. For $5 at the door comes performances by Swordplay, Miss J, P.T. Burnham, Animal's own DJ Khan, and a very special guest speaker, Lacey Landry. Raffle items and other prizes come from hot Richmond spots like Deep Groove, B-Sides, Sub Rosa Bakery, Lamplighter, and more. The notoriously fierce, Team Totally Awesome photo booth will make an appearance so the human animals attending may cherish their memories long after the night is through. Details for Animal Presents Common People can be found at the Animal Facebook page, facebook.com/AnimalRVA.
Feel like messing up. It makes you feel like messing up.
The difficulties facing our city's public schools are persistent and ongoing. In 2005, newly minted Mayor L. Douglas Wilder took his best shot at fixing some of those issues. Many of his overtures, often bullying in their attempted implementation, were rebuffed. But the district's truancy problem was an area where not only did schools and our new mayor collaborate, but they succeeded. Under the mayor's watch, the city secured grant funding to do truancy sweeps and to implement programs to help keep more kids in school. Those programs, administered by Richmond Police, worked well, until grant funding ran out. Apparently, sometime in the waning years of the first term of current Mayor Dwight C. Jones, the money dried up, and with it, the city's truancy sweeps. We talked earlier this week with David Hicks, Jones' chief policy advisor, who's been tasked with cleaning up the mess left by former Deputy City Administrator Carolyn Graham. That's another story for another time. He says he's working to untangle whose job it is to track down truant students and get them back to school. Meanwhile, the whole thing has been good news for truants, but bad news for police, the court system, and residents. The problem recently came to the attention of newly elected school board member Glenn Sturtevant, who represents the 1st District. Residents in that district who live around Thomas Jefferson High School are not happy about the seemingly unchecked comings and goings of students from the school. Glenn Sturtevant is 1st District School Board Representative, and Kim Gray represents the 2nd District. The majority of her district is zoned to attend TJ, and her daughter still attends the school there, and of course the school is in Glenn's district. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
And so you guys are having a forum next Tuesday, is that right?
We are. Kim and I are going to co-host a open forum parent town hall for TJ parents to come.
And it's at the school?
It is. It'll be at the TJ Auditorium, 7:30 on Tuesday, March 26th. And we'll really kind of open it up to the parents and the families of TJ to come and express their concerns and let not just us as the school board reps, but also the principal and the central office administration know about their concerns about their school.
So now there's probably one topic that will at least kick things off and maybe dominate the conversation, and that is at least an anecdotal uptick in truancy in the area. I don't know if it correlates with any sort of criminal activity, but there have been complaints, and I've been hearing them anecdotally as well, that kids are sort of making their way in and out of this building.
Yeah, that's right. Truancy, anecdotally from neighbors in the neighborhood, have really seen a huge spike in the number of TJ students who are really coming and going from the school all day long. And it's not, for the most part, students who are leaving to catch a city bus to go home or to go to a job. It's oftentimes students and groups of students who are walking out the door unsupervised when they shouldn't be, and walking around the neighborhoods nearby in folks' alleys. There have been a lot of instances of some vandalism, some, you know, kids smoking, cutting class. It's, you know, the stuff that you typically expect to see from high school students, but it's been a huge, huge spike in over prior years in terms of the truancy that's been seen from TJ.
Now, am I right that there has been one previous public conversation about this?
We asked for a forum for parents to come out. I know Glenn had a public meeting where the neighborhood came in and discussed their concerns with the school administration. And then we started getting hit on Facebook and phone calls and emails from parents who had concerns. So we asked for a meeting, and that meeting happened to be scheduled at the same time we had a school board meeting. So we were unable to come and hear the concerns. So we wanted to have a meeting that, as school board members, we could participate and hear the concerns of parents. And actually, as a parent, I want to be able to come out and discuss the issues as well.
Now, truancy issues are something that are not just Thomas Jefferson High School. This is something that is citywide a concern in recent months and in the last couple of years. I guess during this administration, right? It's kind of come to the forefront more recently, though.
Absolutely. Well, this school year, apparently, and I don't know what the grant fund was, but there there were funds that went away. So no one indicated that to the school board, the prior school board, or the current school board that these funds were going away, which meant the truancy sweeps and the officers were not going to be available to our schools. Currently, the truancy piece falls under the Department of Juvenile Justice within the City of Richmond and the Police Department. So we don't have any control or authority over what happens with that, which...
Does the district have any truancy officers still, or are they all housed now at the city side?
At TJ, they do have one Richmond Police Department truancy officer who is stationed at the school 5 days a week.
And his job is to leave school grounds to go and track down?
Well, that's the problem, is whether it is city code or it's a handshake deal, those truancy officers in the high schools and specifically in TJ can't go beyond a certain radius around the school. And I think it's typically like a block. It's very, very limited. And so the way that that has worked out in practice is the truancy officer stays in the school and on school grounds, and the kids will leave from the door where the truancy officer is not.
So no missions outside the wire then.
Huh? Exactly.
Interesting.
And now, to give huge credit to the police precinct that serves the area around TJ, in response to our concerns that Kim and I raised, along with Councilman John Beliles, that police precinct, led by Captain Yvonne Crowder and Lieutenant Stith, have actually brought back the truancy sweeps 2 days a week at TJ.
We won't tell which days.
Right.
And real quick, this was the truancy sweeps originally, as they moved over into the administrative side, that was Doug Wilder. He went out and got a grant and pushed to take that function over, brought it under the city, and actually was very aggressive with it for a period of time. And I remember years ago having an interview meeting with police where they showed me the stats, and they had dropped significantly after RPD took over that function directly.
Well, I think the data proved that it was an effective program, with the police department being able to have vehicles out in the communities and picking kids up and bringing them back to the school and giving a consequence. The school resource officers that Glenn referenced earlier don't only do truancy, and the reason they don't want them to venture too far out is because if there's an incident at the school, of course they need to be right there on the spot. So they typically are tasked with calling for other officers to come from within the area, but truancy issues are not the highest priority on a typical police day, you know, when they're handling other crimes and issues in the community. Truancy tends to...
gets kind of downgraded.
Yeah. So if you have dedicated officers, that's what they're there to do.
So another part of this, we talked a little bit about this before the broadcast. We were talking a little bit about the previous principal, Tanya Roan, who had done quite a lot to, I guess, work with the community around TJ as well as within TJ to limit some of this activity.
She absolutely did. She did a lot within the neighborhoods. She got to know the families and the community around the school, as well as the kids. Some of the not so great behaving, bad behaving kids, she got to know them and got to know their families, and even some of the bad actors didn't behave as badly when she was in the proximity. So I think there is something to be said about those relationships.
Now, it seems, and we were talking a little bit about this before the broadcast, we are in a period of significant transition with both the end of this grant money, with Tanya Roan being just one principal that is no longer there. We were talking about how essentially all of our schools, or all of our high schools, have seen turnover at the top post.
Within the past 2 years, every comprehensive high school in the city, as well as one of our alternatives, Open High School, has seen a new principal. And community within the past 4 years, I would say, when the principal there was promoted out.
Do you think, or either of you, I guess, can respond to this, do you think that, there's just some crossed wires that need to get uncrossed here?
Well, I think relationships are key, and knowing the community, knowing the families that you're serving, and actually being able to reach out to the parents, and even if they say, you know, and I've worked with families in the same communities, even if they say that annoying Kim Gray called me again today because you weren't in class, will you please just go to class so she'll stop calling? The result is the kid goes to class. So, you know, it's all about trying to establish relationships and fostering those and staying with those kids over a period of time.
Now, I talked a little bit with David Hicks, who's the mayor's chief policy advisor, and has taken on the role, I guess, or some of the functions of Carolyn Graham, who left unceremoniously a couple of months back with some of the social services issues that the city was having. And he was saying that some of the tie-up really is that there is a sort of some crossed wires between the city and the school system and who is supposed to be in charge of this. Glenn, again, it sounds like you guys have found a way to sort of put a Band-Aid on it, at least in the temporary, by calling on the local precinct and asking them to step in.
That's right. And I mean, I think the data and history has shown that when truancy was dealt with on the city side, and those truancy sweeps were in place, sort of like this Band-Aid that we've brought back on a limited basis, that you did see positive results. And so, you know, I think we have to look at that. We have to look at that data. We have to look at history. We need to look at what was successful and really try to replicate that.
So is there any reason to bring it back under schools?
It'd be concerning to me, I think, from what I've seen in the first 2.5 months on school board, to bring enforcement of truancy back under the schools, simply because we're not the police. We don't do what the police does. And Richmond Police Department has shown that they can be effective in doing these truancy sweeps. But, you know, so much of it starts on the inside of the schools, in that front office, with the leadership of the principal on down. It's the same thing on school board. It's the same thing in the superintendent's office. It all depends about what sort of leadership is being brought to bear and the culture that is being created. And I think that's what Kim touched on with Principal Tanya Roan, really creating that culture of the kids staying in school throughout the day. And it's the same thing that we've, I think, seen with this new school board of creating this new culture of accountability and reform. So it really is it's an issue that is something that needs to be addressed, I think, throughout the system.
It's so refreshing to have.
Kim is over there just basking.
To have a board that is a thinking board and open-minded and willing to take up causes for the right reasons. So I'm standing with this board.
And real quick, too, I am with Glenn Sturtevant, who's the First District School Board representative that Kim Gray, the Second District representative, is very happy to welcome to the board, along with some of the other members. And wanted to talk one more thing before we let you guys go, and that is the school closure plan that you guys are looking at. You voted, I suppose, to close two schools, unclear which schools, presumably elementary schools, although I don't know that for certain. I'm saying that because I'm assuming.
I think everything's on the table at this point, so we're looking at all, finding efficiencies across the board. And
So, again, you're looking at closing two schools. You did vote to approve that.
Yes.
Nothing was named, and the last time, I guess, Kim, you were on the show recently with Kristen Larson, we did not have yet a schedule for how this would unfold. What's the deal?
Well, I mean, we are slated to name the two schools that we intend to close by April 26th. We'll then have three public hearings on that for families to come out and give us their thoughts. And those will be on April 29th, May 6th, and May 20th. And then we'll have the final vote after that last public hearing on the night of May 20th. But, you know, the rezoning committee spent countless hours and months looking at this. And, you know, there has been fair criticism that we need to look at things beyond just bricks and mortar and, you know, what neighborhood feeds into what school. We need to also look at how schools are performing. So, you know, this is always an emotional issue, as it should be, because it involves your children's school and where they're going to end up going. But at the end of the day, Richmond Public Schools can't afford to operate 55 schools in a city of 200,000 people and a school system of 23,000 students. It's unsustainable, and it's taking money out of the pockets of teachers. It's preventing us from spending that money in the classrooms where it really needs to be spent. Instead, we're spending it on really old schools, heating them and cooling them and staffing them with principals and assistant principals. So, you know, we were elected to make difficult decisions, and I think we had to provide the leadership to do that.
So the 26th, it's a pretty tight deadline to determine which schools are looking axable.
Yeah, we've got plenty of meetings in between where we're having a presentation from the consultant who did the rezoning study. We are looking at prior facilities plans, the facility master plan that was done in 2002 and updated twice. The most recent was 2007. So
I'm assuming you'd be looking at maintenance schedules as well and things that need...
We just had a study on all of our systems, all of our mechanicals, so we know what it's going to cost and what the age of those systems are. So
all about 100 years.
Right. And we also have to consider the ADA settlement, because we have some major elevator projects coming up in buildings, and if we're looking at a building that is more than a half a century old and putting $500,000 to $1 million, then it may not be the best choice. So we're considering the whole picture.
Okay. And again, with Glenn Sturdivant, or I have been with Glenn Sturdivant and Kim Gray, first and second district school board representatives, respectively. And thank you guys for being here today. Again, your meeting is on Tuesday.
Tuesday the 26th, 7:30 at the TJ High School Auditorium.
Expect to see some parents out, I'm sure.
We hope.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Did you know that there are about 20, count them 20, farmers markets each week in Richmond and the surrounding counties? Wouldn't leave you out. That means there is a place near your home or work where you can touch the hand that grows your food. You don't need to use much gas to gather naturally raised meats, fresh vegetables, and fruits, crafts, cheeses, and prepared foods, all while supporting your local community. Maybe you can even bicycle there. For more information, you can visit vdacs.virginia.gov/VAGrown or go to richmondgoodlife.com and click on Farmers Markets.
If the story of the French Film Festival were made into a movie, audiences probably would find it a bit far-fetched. A piece of Parisian whimsy or even pure fantasy, critics would say. But Peter and Francois Kirkpatrick's dream 21 years ago of holding a world-class festival devoted to the best in new French cinema and to have it in the former capital of the Confederacy has come true, bringing its own kind of internationally flavored March Madness to Richmond. Thanks to the diligent efforts of the Kirkpatricks, the festival has showcased approximately 400 screenings over the years and brought more than 175 actors, directors, critics, and French government officials to town. They participate in symposiums and Q&As that reveal the inspirational process behind contemporary filmmaking in France. In the process, the French Film Festival has made sleepy-eyed Richmond, Virginia, a player in world cinema. For their achievements in creating this 4-day annual event, The Kirkpatricks have received one of France's highest honors in the field of arts and culture, the Order of Arts and Letters. And this year's French Film Festival, which kicked off last night at the Bird in Carytown, looks to be another incredible assemblage of new and recent works, world premieres, and spirited discussion. There's even a movie about the French Film Festival itself, entitled 2B20 in Richmond. Turns out this story, still being written, isn't so far-fetched. The festival, which continues through Sunday, is real, and it's, as the French would say, divan. We're honored to have with us today the festival's organizers and founders, Peter and Francois Kirkpatrick. They are, respectively, professors of French literature, culture, and film studies at Virginia Commonwealth University and the University of Richmond. Thank you both for coming.
Oh, Don, thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for having us.
Well, first of all, let's start at the beginning. How did the two of you first meet?
Ah, well, going back to that, actually, you know, in a way, the festival, if you think about it, how we met, it was born out of a creative activity of Françoise, because when I first met Françoise, she was on stage as an actress and in French here in Richmond. Mm-hmm. And there was a French troupe that was putting on plays. Mm-hmm. And I saw her, and then I learned teaching at the University of Richmond. And then to make a long story short, one day I was on a Fulbright in France. Françoise was on sabbatical from the University of Richmond. And we met again by happenstance and a train in France. And we left that year, France, to come back to the United States as a married couple.
Wow. And so did you bond through film, or was it something else?
You know, Françoise's research is in Marcel Proust, French literature, mm-hmm. and semiotics, and mine is in French political discourse and nonverbal behavior. Together, we've done a lot of filming of ourselves, of politicians in France, and so we're always interested and nonverbal communication, gestures, and film art, and the visual language. So it was one of those things where we originally, you know, when I started at VCU 21 years ago, we said, what can we create here in Richmond to attract more students mm-hmm. to French language and culture? And we thought maybe with our contacts in France and the cinema industry, that would probably be a good way to try. And it just kept growing and growing and growing from that. That's how I remember things 21 years ago. Françoise,
do you want to fact check that?
Yeah, no, that's about it. And what we wanted to do, we wanted to find a way to bring French culture and the French language to Richmond and to Virginia. And we had this idea of showing the last cinematographic production in France to an American audience. Mm-hmm. We had students or friends or people that we knew who were not familiar with French cinema mm-hmm. after the Nouvelle Vague. Mm-hmm. And we thought that we wanted to show them that French cinema is very alive mm-hmm. As also very interesting to know the politics of France, the cultural life of France, the social problems, and that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. It just kept growing and growing. I mean, from the very first French Film Festival, where it was on VCU's campus, and to the second and third, where we had the old Biograph. I don't know if you know.
We had the
second and third one there. And we were in the middle of the night calling people in France and asking, you know, permission to show their films again because it was just packed housing.
I'm curious about the reaction. Was it rich?
Well, it was like, you know, saying that? They actually created a buzz over in France immediately saying, like, what's happening in Richmond? So that at the point of the fourth festival, we knew we needed a bigger venue. And we said, my goodness, if, you know, one day we could ever have it at the Bird Theater and fill the Bird Theater for French film, mm-hmm. I mean, wouldn't that be something in itself? And that's what immediately happened. And when that fourth festival, we brought Thierry Lhermitte in, and it's just, as you mentioned, the hundreds of people that have been here and hundreds of films we've had, the French really look towards coming to Richmond, and for several reasons. One, it's the contact with the people here mm-hmm. That come to the festival. It's an American public. It's not going to a larger city where, you know, it's going to be French expats who come out to see their films.
Yeah.
So if they're going to hop across the Atlantic Ocean, they say, and they want to come and hear an American reaction to their film. So we do that at the Bird Theater, and we also fly in the same artist technicians who run the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. That's incredible stuff for us because they don't take it back with them, do they?
Well, you know, it's amazing because, one, it's the only place in the United States where you can truly see films the way they're shown at the Cannes Film Festival. Mm. The screen in the Bird Theater is the size in between of the two largest screens at the Cannes Film Festival. So you actually have the size of the image, and also you have all of it tweaked to its optimal visual and sound. And so that's a gift that actually we give, and it continues throughout the year at the Bird Theater.
Mm-hmm. And I understand you saw your very first French film at the Bird many,
oh my
many years
goodness,
ago.
You must, talk about that? There's some unedited bio you must
yeah,
be reading.
I got some stuff.
Yes, I did. And in fact, I remember it very well. And the you know, the one of the interesting things about that is that you know, here you are later in life, and you remember the experience that you had as a youngster watching French film in that theater. It wasn't packed like the festival packs
right,
it with
right.
1,400 people. But
what was that, Mon Oncle?
Yeah, okay. It was. And so, you just realize it's how life ends up being a very interesting journey. And with the people you meet, the person that you marry, and also what we do in the theater.
Do y'all ever argue about films? Does one person say, well, you know, I really want this film in, the other, I don't think
what we do when we are choosing films, we go to the Cannes market, the Cannes Festival market. It's a big market where you could see all the films mm-hmm. that have been done and they're not yet shown. And there are so many films to see that we have to see some. I see some of them, Peter sees some of the others. And we decide if it's worth for the other one to see what we've seen.
Uh-huh.
And so yes, sometimes we argue because
we diplomatically
discuss.
Talk to each other
yes.
and discuss,
right.
Yeah, we discuss, but we try to share the task of seeing all those movies.
See all those movies
yes.
and consider all those
yeah,
movies.
I know one time I said several years ago, Francois and I, we came back from Cannes, someone asked us, because like, how's this whole thing about, you know, screening and when you go back and forth with friends, but the Cannes Film Festival, your alarm clock becomes an object that hurts
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you're really getting up and at 8 in the morning, you're already in front of a film mm-hmm. and you're going to bed at 1:30, 2 in the morning, and you do that for 10 days nonstop. And so just to give you an idea, the French make about 220 feature films a year. We see them all. They're not all at Cannes, but we see about 80 of those
mm-hmm.
at the Cannes Film Festival. And then we're always thinking about our public here in Richmond. Virtually we're never disappointed with films that we see.
I was going to ask, do you ever consider the audience? Do you ever say, this might not be something, this is good, but it might not be something Richmond would like?
Yes, we do that. And also we consider the program itself, the entire program itself, because we want to show it a variety, a diversity of films. And so sometimes we have to put aside some films that we really like because
mm-hmm.
Of the audience, but also because of the programs that we want to have balanced and interesting
right.
for different people.
Yeah, they can't all be one subject or
no,
one style.
Exactly.
You wanna...
Yeah, in fact, you know, it's really to show the diversity of the French film industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the country, you know, with the Lumiere brothers that give us cinema, and they're very proud of that diversity. And so we go out of the way to show those diverse films. But, you know, also to keep in mind that, you know, even perhaps, you know, the films that we see that we know, some films may not have done a blockbuster in France, but we know for the American public they would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it goes both ways sometimes. And, you know, so, you know, I think one of the amazing things at our festival is to see also the interaction between the American public and these actors and directors. And since truly our public, not all of them know how famous these directors and actors truly are
uh-huh.
in France, they're very straightforward and frank and asking questions about their films.
Mm-hmm.
And they love that. They say, you know, I was in a packed house at the Bird Theater and we had Americans asking us questions that, you know, French people don't even ask
mm-hmm.
us about our films. And
yeah, I noticed you get a lot of spirited questions.
We really
some
do.
People really get involved. Sometimes they don't like what they saw.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, they ask questions. Sometimes they, you know, I don't know, it could be even a children's animation, you know, that they may ask questions about if it's, you know, if it deals with evolution rather than the creation type theory. And they ask the questions, and tell you the truth, the French, you know, who love to talk and love to explain their ideas and always have an opinion about things, they like getting into it like that. So it makes the question and answers after the Bird Theater also an event in itself.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I love this quote from the French diplomat Jean-David Levet. The festival is a perfect example of what passion can achieve. Talk about what it takes to pull this off every year. It seems just like a Herculean effort. A lot of collaborations.
It is because you have to understand that the permanent teams that we have is composed of two people, Peter and I, because we work with French interns coming from French universities, mm-hmm. and with students from the University of Richmond and the University of VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University, and so. It means that every year you have to reinvent the wheel. Mm. And yes, we need a lot of passion.
Yeah, you get the help from the Virginia Film Office, you have the Virginia Film Office of yes. Style Weekly, to the French yeah. Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Culture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Working with all of these different people mm-hmm. in all these different areas, it seems yes. to be. Kind of
oh, it is. I mean, it's truly a very dynamic, it's a very unique mix too, because we are definitely the only event in the United States for French film where you have a public university and a private university who are the co-academic sponsors of it. Mm-hmm. But also, we're the only ones to have the ties to the industry in France, both on the technical side, like we talked about earlier with the Cannes Film Festival, but also on the artistic side, on the directing side.
And the political side.
And the political side. And, you know, all those elements have to come in together. But really what makes the dynamic for us as professors truly worthwhile is this interaction with the American students at VCU and U of R with our French interns. And we create this team, and it's a team every year that's unique, just like it is the festival itself with the films and the actors and directors every year and unique. But it's a magic that happens. It takes a lot of effort, and you virtually are training every year. But, you know, that's why we got into academia mm-hmm. is, you know, mm-hmm. we like teaching and we like passing on knowledge. So a lot of our students who have been with us in the festival in a year, I mean, now there's some that have their own film production companies. There's some that have gone out to directing or acting. There's several who are involved in film distribution in France. And then there's other students who have had the experience and they thought they wanted to be in cultural activities. And they said, "You must be nuts.
There's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. You all never, you know, no one ever sleeps, and no one's ever paid. And you know, and that's, you know, that's just about the love of culture and art, I guess."
Well, the festival's brought some amazing filmmakers to Richmond over the years, from directors Bertrand Tavernier and Claude Laloche to countless actors and technicians. I know it's unfair, but can you talk about some of your favorite highlights from the past 20 years? Either movies that were screened or appearances that were particularly inspiring to people?
Francoise, you want to go first?
Well, every year has been an experience. And every directors and actors that we have had here have really brought us a lot of pleasure and knowledge. And it's a very tough question.
I know. It's like asking you to pick your favorite child.
What we like them to come back. And uh-huh. for instance, right now we have Josiane Balasko, who's coming back. She has been with us several times. She's a wonderful actress, and she can play comedy, dramas, and so on. She's also a director on her own. She's also a writer. And this is just a big pleasure to have her. Mm-hmm. And so your question is unfair.
But,
it's like which finger or toe do you want
to... She's the last one that to be here since she's here for this festival. So yeah, Josiane.
Yeah, you know, actually, for me, to tell you the truth, Don, it's all. There's magical moments, and it's not necessarily about, you know, the famous actors or the directors mm-hmm. who are here that are involved in those moments and then truly make them happen. But like we were saying earlier, it's the interaction and these magical moments. It's because of our public and our students mm-hmm. and the individuals asking questions out of, and, you know, sitting in the Bird Theater, that there's this interaction and creativity and discussion that for me are some of the things that the sharpest in my mind. And then because of it, you actually end up having some of these actors and directors do things in the Bird Theater that they just, they're having such a wonderful experience in Carytown at the Bird Theater. They give 100% of themselves. Mm-hmm. And through that, they all go back to France and they're our best ambassadors. Mm-hmm. And it comes a point where, you know, when you start an event like this, I guess for the first, you know, 6 to 8 years, it was always, you know, it was always a constant battle to, you know, to negotiate the films and things like that. And finally, you know, 21 years now, it's nice to get phone calls from, you know,
yeah, actors. I know you. Directors.
Yeah.
And you got a proven track record.
You got a proven track record. I mean, it's such a point, you know, we've had some wonderful memories outside of the Bird Theater over in France where, you know, a director who was working on a new film and shooting a film, you know, invites us to say, you know, I think my film may be ready in time for your festival. Would you all like to come and spend some time on the shoot and, you know, see how it's mm-hmm. going to be? And that way you can just base maybe your judgment off the shoot and reading the script. And actually, that's one of the cases for one of the films here. And the film by Claude Miller. Claude Miller was our honorary president for years.
Right, he's been here many times. Right. Mm-hmm.
Many times, our honorary president. And unfortunately, Claude passed away last April. But the August before, in fact, even a year and a half before, he was staying at our house here in the Fan. And he asked Francois, he goes, like, do you have the book Thérèse d'Escarbot? And Francois said, sure, let me go upstairs in the library and get it. And, you know, so he's at our house and he started working on this film. And so this film has an interesting history. We're going to be happy to present it on Sunday because we remember Claude working in our house on the film. And then he invited us, you know, to be on the shoot with him and Audrey Tautou. And even though Claude was very, very sick with cancer at that time, he was determined to make that film, and despite how tired he was in the evening after shooting, he always made time to take us out to dinner and to have discussions with us. So it would be an emotional moment to show Claude's
last work.
Yeah,
that's a real personal connection. Yeah. Last year, like I said, the event celebrated 20 years, a new documentary about the festival is going to be screened this year. How do y'all feel about that?
We have not.
That makes you feel venerable.
Well, yeah, it's we're very touched. And Pierre William Glenn, he's, you know, one of the world's best cinematographers. I mean, he's worked from everyone from Truffaut to Rivette to American directors, and from also with actors from Steve McQueen on, and the fact that Pierre William Glenn, who's just ecstatic about our festival, and but the fact that he took time and to work with actually VCU students and La Fémis Film School students in France last year, shooting footage during the 20th anniversary of our festival, and that he took 4.5 months of his time to edit all that, with him being so busy. I mean, he's really the person that's behind.
And it's a 40-minute film.
It's a 24-minute film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and actually, when the program came out, he was still editing it, and we asked him, "Well, how long is this going to be?"
I want to see that 16 minutes that was cut out.
And you know, your question, because Francois and I, our hands are sweating right now because of all the films. This is the only one we haven't seen. You know, so that idea of screening it and being there and discovering it with everyone else is going to be a special treat. We hope. I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. Hey, talk about the academic side of this, too. It's an important component. I understand that some illustrious French film schools work with the French Film Festival. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, actually, the festival has a partnership for years now with La Fémis, which is truly, people always say their schools are best, but La Fémis historically is considered the world's best film school, and it's in Paris. It's in the old Pathé studios. And
it's a former EDEC.
Yeah, it used to be called EDEC before they changed the name to La Fémis. The professors in the school are filmmakers, are script writers, and so it's the students there. It's a very highly selective entrance exam to get into the school. So we have that partnership where we've actually brought over their students. They've filmed, made shorts here in Richmond during the festival, their own shorts with our VCU students, but also. We have translated the Fémis's master thesis, the student's master thesis that they write before they make their own short film in order to graduate. And so we have screened some of their short films on our website. We have the translation in English of their master thesis. Mm-hmm. And this continuation, actually, this festival here, we're very happy because Marc Nicolas, who's the general director of the school, will be here all throughout the weekend. He's given us a master class about the relationship between French and American film industries. He is very important in the industry in France because he's worked with the Ministry of Cultures for years before becoming the director of La Fémis. And Claude Miller also was the president of La Fémis Film School. And when he passed away, we're also having now Raoul Peck coming back to Richmond. And he's a Haitian filmmaker, but he's also the president of La Fémis Film School. So this relationship is also a very privileged relationship that the festival has, that also our students, both at the University of Richmond and VCU, benefit by coming in contact with those students and those professors that teach at La Fémis.
Something that caught my eye, I didn't know about this class that was developed on the history and the practice of film subtitling. Can you talk about that? That's just really interesting to me, because I do think there's an art to that. Mainly, don't show the titles over on a white background, please.
Well, yeah. Actually, last year we had the inventor of the process where you can now read white on white subtitles. Oh. Denis Auboyer was here, and we have a partnership. He owns and founded the largest post-production studio in Europe, and he invented laser subtitling. And through that partnership also, the festival has been able to create the class on subtitling, where we have graduate students and undergraduate students who are French majors and other language majors or film majors, and we go through the theory and the practice of subtitling and what that involves, using also the proprietary software from DigiImage, this post-production studio. And our students have been now subtitling in that class, and the subtitling class is one of many academic courses that have grown out of the festival. In addition to an internship program, there's also a student program, the University of Richmond, with the festival. And also we have a graduate course for high school teachers across the state of Virginia that come in. And I think, what you've hit on, this idea of the importance of subtitling. If you think about subtitling, not just that because it allows us to understand different cultures by having subtitles and understanding films, but even more importantly, I think what subtitling, the whole process, and with our students, and also the experience they have, it is actually the largest growing aspect of audiovisual and film, because there have been laws that have just been enacted in several countries around the world, where it's mandatory in order to subtitle things now if they're going to be on television, closed captioning things. Right. So it's an exploding field for specialists in language. Mm-hmm. But it is an art. And that's
absolutely.
It is an art. And we've all seen films where we were saying, like, what in the world was that?
Or she didn't really say that. She said something else.
Yeah, it's a technical art, but it's also a poetic art. And You have to know your own language. In our case, my case would be English. You have to know English very, very well, but you need to know that other source language very, very well too. And then it's a matter of poetics. It's truly poetics of trying to find a word that really represents a concept of several words, because you have to crunch down virtually what an actor is saying. You only have one third of the amount of space. So. We've enjoyed that, Francoise and I, and it's something that's led now to a dream that we've had for years with that partnership and other partnerships in France with the Cinémathèque Française and also with the CST and DigiImage in France. We finally, this festival, the 21st Film Festival, we're going to bring to realization a dream of 15 years now of actually distributing films through the festival. So we're going to be here throughout the whole festival selling three DVDs, three films, two of which we have subtitled ourselves.
This is new territory.
This is brand new territory. In fact, it's the first type of academic and also public distribution of films. And so these films will only be available through the festival as an exclusive distribution. One of them is a historic film that a lot of people have either wanted to write about or written about, but just hasn't been available, definitely without, to the Anglophone public. And so Avoir 20 ans dans les Aurès by René Vautier, which is called To Be 20 in the Aurès. It's about the Algerian War, and that's, I think, where Pierre William Glenn got the title.
Okay.
He said, To Be 20 in Richmond, yes. So, and then there's a great documentary that we showed last year about Hitchcock and the New Wave and how all those New Wave film directors.
I missed that. I want to see that.
Well, now you can actually, you can buy it from us and see our subtitles.
Help can help keep the festival going, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And then the final DVD that we have is a collection. It's the first volume of our shorts. So we're hopefully in the years to come, we'll be able to capture and have on DVD all the shorts that we featured at the past film festival.
Oh,
so
wow.
On this DVD, we have 11 shorts from different festivals, and it's students and teachers have been asking us to do this for years. Yeah, it would be impossible. It would take a radio show about 3 hours just to explain all you have to do to get the rights and things mm-hmm. and technical things to get all that organized. But it's here, and so they've asked for it, and we'll see how well they sell and during the festival and through the website.
Well, maybe we should wrap it up here with this kind of. This may be unfair too. What differentiates the French sensibility in film from that of cinema from other countries, particularly movies from the U.S.? Is it something that we can put a finger on?
Well, yeah, I think I'll let Francoise also join in this. I mean, when you watch that documentary on Hitchcock, mm-hmm. I think that also gets into that a little bit, because these new wave filmmakers, Truffaut and Chabrol and Romer, Rivette and Godard, they, before becoming filmmakers, they were film critics, and they were the ones really to start to unearth and look at Hitchcock. You know, we all mm-hmm, have a certain mm-hmm. image of Hitchcock.
Or Howard Hawks.
Yeah, Howard Hawks. You know, they were called that. You know, the Hitchcockians. You know, and so, you know, they looked at this filmmaker and they said, no, there's something original. There's something different about this. And so, this idea of being an author of your work,
mm-hmm.
and that truly implies also
an auteur.
It is an auteur. Yeah. Exactly. So an auteur, being the auteur of your work, that means that you're truly in control of that creation. And this idea, it's truly the spirit of independent mm-hmm. filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's much different beast than, you know, the commercial type of filmmaking that we're so used to. And so it gets to the story. Francois, I don't know if you want to...
Take a stab at it, Francois. What is it that makes French cinema different?
No, I think you're right. I think they are pretty much involved. The French may be pretty much involved from the script writing to directing to the editing. I remember Claude telling us about the way that he liked to supervise the editing. So it's really this concept of doing the work from A to Z, and which is maybe a little bit different.
It's inspiring.
It's inspiring.
In fact, we always tell ourselves, despite all the hard work, I mean, it takes a year to prepare the French Film Festival. I mean, as soon as this one's over, we start working on the next one. And despite all how tired we are in the office, how much we give to it, you know, the sleepless nights and everything it takes to put together, despite all how we feel and how tired we feel at certain times, we know that may be small compared to what it takes to make a feature film. I mean, what these directors go through from the writing process.
And,
it's a miracle, really.
It is.
And maybe I want to add also the fact that technicians are considered in France as artist technicians. And there is even a prize now at the Cannes Festival for the best artist technician for his work in one of the films in competition in Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that that's the subject also of the masterclass that we had mm-hmm. yesterday at the University of Richmond, which is a relationship between art and techniques.
Right.
And this is something that you could feel in a French film, I think.
Uh-huh. Well, I've been speaking with Peter and Francois Kirkpatrick, the organizers and founders of the French Film Festival. This year's 21st installment of the prestigious event is happening right now at the historic Byrd Theater in Kerrytown, literally as we speak, and continues through Sunday. For a full schedule of screenings, master classes, and related events, you can go to frenchfilmfestival.us. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And that's Open Source RVA for Friday, March 22nd, 2013. I'm Don Harrison, and my co-hosts are Chris Dovey and Amy Daniel. Our producers are Jay Westerman and Gabby Schatzi, and our guest engineer this week is Andrew Hawes. Our researcher is Jonathan Cunningham, and the part of Mike McKenzie was played this week by Gerard Depardieu. We hope you've had time to tune into our co-host Chris Dobie's live blogging of today's TEDxRVA event. If not, go check out his chat on Branch.com, featuring an impressive roster of city luminaries at the TEDxRVA Tumblr page. We'll see you next week for another edition of Open Source RVA.